Accession number 30404, Mr. Ted Clements, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Clements?
I was born in Durban in 1920.
What was the date?
29th of March, 1920.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background, what they were doing out in Durban?
My father had been out in 1914 and joined the Royal Durban Light Infantry and went to German West to fight the Germans. He came back later on in the year and was discharged from the Royal Durban Light Infantry and then went back to England, and from there he went across to France. And he was in France and back and forth. I don't know a lot about what he did, but I do know that he had some hair-raising experiences and so on, and he survived somehow, but it was most unusual. But I do know that he was there right through until 1918, when he was discharged once more. But then after that, he and a few friends who'd been out to South Africa in 1914 liked the country, and there wasn't much going on here in Britain at the time, so they decided to emigrate, which is what they did. And they went out to live in Durban. And in the meanwhile, he was married. And he and his wife, Dorothy, came to South Africa. And I was born in 1920. And they were there for two, I was there for 2 years before we got our own house. We stayed with other folk, other Cornish people who moved out there.
Now, what was your father doing out there? I mean, what living was he making by then?
Actually, he had been trained as a bricklayer, but he was a builder. He built, you know, helped others and worked with other people. The Cornish people were quite prominent in Durban for building, and that's what he did. He helped a friend of his who's been with him in German West, and worked together there. And then he got a job, a position as an inspector on the municipality, where he stayed for the rest of his career until he retired in about 60.
Reasonably prosperous then, but
yes, of course.
Now, what was your childhood like? What sort of house did you live in? What sort of social circumstances were you in?
Well, we lived in a little dormitory area, which was very nice, and quite near to an indigenous forest, which is a delight for young boys and so on. And the house was a very well-constructed wooden iron house, which they built all over the place at that time, you know, to get them up quickly and erect them. And very, very comfortable indeed, in a lovely area, nice folk, nice people, and a very good school nearby, which I attended.
Tell us a bit about your education, how you did at school, what you were good at, what you were bad at.
Well, of course, I was always good at sport for a start, but when we get to the academic side, I think science was a good one of mine, and mathematics. And from then on, I went ahead, and in the top standard of the preparatory school, I won a bursary to go to a high school nearby, for 4 years, and I was only there for 4 years, so I had this bursary. And I did very well in a primary school, and then went there and also, you know, had a wonderful experience in that school, one of the nicest schools I've ever known, that I ever can think of, because we had, it's a strange thing, but we had teachers from England and London University teachers. Our headmaster was a graduate of London University, such a wonderful man. And we had two or three others, a science master and the English teacher. They were both English. They come from the UK to be out there and teach. I don't know. The provincial people must have recruited them at some time or another. And it was wonderful that we had them, you know. And it was a great thing. We had, of course, in the school, being South Africa, we were always keen on sport. So
that's about the sport then. What sports did you play?
I played cricket. And at the preparatory school, we were only allowed to play soccer. And then when I went to the high school, we played cricket, and we were only allowed to play rugby. We weren't allowed to play cricket. Well, football, I mean. You call it football here. We weren't allowed to play football at all. We had to play rugby. And I was pulled up once in the early days of First Ages for playing soccer, football on a Sunday afternoon and playing rugby on a Saturday morning. And that wasn't the right thing to do as far as the school was concerned. Not the headmaster so much, but we had a sportsmaster, very, very keen, he was Afrikaans actually, so he came from Stellenbosch University, very keen on rugby, and we did very well. We had a good, very good team.
Now, what were you going to do? I mean, you concentrated on, what, maths and science. Where was that leading to you two?
It led me to university. And
now, which university did you go to and when?
I went to it was Durban University.
And what did
Natal, it was, sorry, it was called Natal University.
But it was in Durban?
In Durban, yes.
And what were you studying there?
I studied architecture.
Now, why architecture? What pushed you into that? Or not pushed, sorry, what made you choose that?
Well, I think my father's influence to a certain extent, and also I was very interested in building, and I was rather good at sketching and so on, and so that led me to it. And
so
then, but
so you went, what, when you were 18, 1938?
Yeah, I was, 17.
1937.
Yes.
And what was life like? I mean, did you stay at home or did you stay in digs? Or I mean, because you were in your home.
No, I stayed at home. And I had a brother who was 6 years younger than me. He came on too as well. No, we lived as a family and had lovely family friends and so on. Very much a homely place to be. My mother was from England, of course, and from Plymouth. And she used to make these wonderful Cornish pasties and lots of people used to enjoy them. Come around, other boys used to always be cadging a piece off me when I was at school, if I took one to school, and so on. So the life was good. We had a lovely life. We had indigenous forests. We saw lots of animals, birds, and all that sort of thing. And, you know, life was...
You enjoyed your studies
as
well.
Yes, I enjoyed my studies too, of course. Yes, sorry, I'm wandering a bit.
Not at all. Now, you were there... I mean, while you were there, were you aware at all of what was going on in Germany? Did you see, as an educated young man living in Natal, did you see any prospect of war, of South Africa taking part of it on Natal? I mean,
yes.
What did you think of the world situation?
Well, I think we did understand to a certain extent what Germany was doing, but we never ever thought they would do what they did. We always thought, you know, well, it's stirring up, it's just a nation, and they're building themselves up and trying to get places, but we never ever thought that there would be another war, a Second World War, because we were very much concerned about the First World War, my parents and so on, and the others, and I'm sure they had their misgivings about what was happening. But it didn't concern me all that much at all at that time. But then when we were at university and we found that the Germans were moving, and when I got to the age of 20, I joined the forces.
No, so
sorry,
what about the outbreak of, what do you remember about, no, just jumped a bit.
Yeah.
What do you remember about the outbreak of war then? I mean, did you hear the broadcast? Was it considered the outbreak when England came into war, Britain came into war, 3rd of September? Did you hear Chamberlain's broadcast?
Yes, we did. We listened to all of it. Being British descent, we were very interested in all that was going on, very worried about it.
I mean, did you think it would involve you? What did you think, you and your family, your father?
Well,
I mean, father and mother were English.
Yes. Yeah. Being British, you said, I felt that we would be, and there was so much. They used to call Durban the last outpost of the British Empire. There were so many British people there, immigrants, you know, had come in, and so on, and it was a big concern of ours. And, we were worried about it, and
did it affect life at all? You were still at university.
Yes.
Did it affect your life in Natal at the university?
Not at that particular time. No, it didn't affect us. But we knew about it. We were concerned about it. And I had a principal, because we did part time university and part time working in an office, an architect's office.
Now tell me, let's just do a little bit about that. What was it like working in the office? What were you doing there?
I was doing drafting, drawing, learning all about how one should design and all that sort of thing, and also supervision of buildings, you see, the way that they were done, and we used to go and watch and see these people. And I was going to tell you about my principal. He was he was gassed and wounded in the First World War. And he was such a wonderful man, he really was. And, you know, we used to talk about all this sort of thing, and I used to ask him, you know, I say, what was it like and what did you do? And do you think we should do something? He said, well, that's up to the government to see whether they can do it. Well, even though we were at that time still an apartheid government, we did, they did, what is the word for it, organize troops and different regiments and so on. And we had them, you know, from early on, in the early days, we had these different units that were named, like the Royal Durban Light Infantry that took part in the First World War, and the Natal Mounted Rifles, which I joined up. They were mostly chaps, students from our school and from another prominent school near us. And we were concerned about what was happening, but then, of course, the South Africa, even with the apartheid situation, they decided to join in the war.
Now, when did they join in?
I'm trying to think of that. Well, it could have been, it
I'm
must
not
have been
sure
1940, you see, is when I joined up. But in June 1940.
Now, had you finished your university course?
No, no, I had not finished.
Now, tell me, how did you come to join? You joined the Natal Mounted Rifles. How did you come to do that? What made you do it?
Well, we didn't like the unrest and so on and things that were happening and the murdering and everything that we heard about.
Now what?
What's going on?
Well, in Germany?
Or in Germany, yes. And that was the thing, the incentive for us to go. And a lot of us, I mean, so many, the Natal Mounted Rifles and the Royal Durban Light Infantry were so many chaps from those two schools of ours, old boys and, you know, the, well, older chaps, of course.
Now, how did you come to join? I mean, what did you have to do to join? Where did you go to join?
Well, it was very simple. They had a recruiting office for each regiment, and one went down there and signed on and was given a number and so on, and then told that you must report at such and such a time. And I knew the NMR were going away with to do training in a place called Ladysmith, which is, goes back to British times as well. Ladysmith, it was called. And I wanted to get there with my friends, and some of them had already joined up. They'd done a year before, but being a student, we were allowed to postpone our training at that time, because the usual thing was for them to for young men to have a month's training every year. You see, military training, despite the government, despite it happened even before the war started. They used to do this, and I think it was a wonderful thing they did. I think it
was this compulsory?
It was compulsory.
And it was a month a year?
A month a year.
But you hadn't done that
No,
yet.
I hadn't done that because I was a student. I was excused that because I was a student, exempted from it because I was a student. And then, of course,
when did you go to Ladysmith then? That's with the Natal Mounted Rifles for your training.
Yes, June.
That was June.
June, yes.
And what was the setup at? What was the camp like at Ladysmith?
Well, normal sort of military barracks. I wouldn't say luxurious by any means. It was quite rough, you know. The places, the windows. Doors open half the time, and freezing cold it was for people coming from our coast to come up to Ladysmith in the winter time. Was really freezing, absolutely freezing.
Winter is June the winter there. I'm
yeah,
sure
well,
it's
June
it,
yes. No, June, July, August is winter.
Freezing cold. Head around the southern hemisphere there.
Yes, of course. It's not like a winter you get here, but it's cold. You get frost on the ground at night, you know. And we used to go out and.
Now, hang on. Well, how many to a room? Was it a big barrack with a big room and, you know, 20
yes,
or 30?
Yes, there were about 20 of us in each of these barracks, yes.
And can you take us through, you know, what a typical day's training might be like? I mean, what sort of thing were
yeah,
you doing?
Yeah, well, the first thing was reveille in the morning, the usual army thing, reveille at 6 o'clock. And we'd get up and go and shower. And, you know, you find it hard to believe, but we did not have hot water. We had cold water. But we used to shower in this cold water and just about freeze. And then you get the first parade, you'd have morning parade, and they'd tell you the orders of the day, and then you'd give a break for breakfast, and then form up again at about 8 o'clock. And then do whatever we're going to do, all sorts. Drill, of course, lots of drill, parade ground drill.
How'd you take to drill?
Oh, well, I did it like everybody else, I suppose. I thought it was a bit stupid, but we did it.
And what else were you doing?
And then you go on manoeuvres, we go marches, marching over the hills nearby. It was a very hilly part of the world. And go marching, and then go to the range and practice shooting and things like that. And
rifle shooting
in those days, yes. We had very little army equipment at that time, had nothing much. We had mostly rifles and bayonets, of course. First World War equipment still.
Did you do any bayonet training?
Yes, of course, yes. Yes, I did that. But never ever used it in the whole of my career, there wasn't any need for it.
And what sort of exercise, did you do any sort of tactical training, attacks or the rest of it?
Yes, we did. We used to do that. We had two other battalions with us. Two other companies with us. And we formed a battalion, and they were... well, it's hard to say this, but a lot of them were people who'd been, said, well, they've done something wrong, and they either do a year in jail or else join the army sort of thing. So you can imagine what we put up. But some of them were very good. They were wonderful later on in the campaigns. They were very good. But we had them, two battalions of them, two companies. Now, I'm trying to think. Let me get that one right. Two battalions of them. They're called the 1st SSB, Special Service Brigade, and the second one, and number two, also.
And special. What were you in then?
I was in the Natal Mounted Rifles.
That's just what it was called?
Yes, it was. Affiliated to the 3rd Hussars, by the way, which is a connection I had. Very proud of it, I must say. And we had, funnily enough, at our battalion, we had a Highland band. We had a pipe band. Can you believe it? I mean, why we had a pipe band, heaven alone knows, but we did.
Where
they came from.
Was there a Scottish connection?
Yes. Well, I don't know. It was 3rd King's Hussars. I don't know. I really don't know. I've often wondered about that.
I mean, how did you find the pipe band? It's not an instrument that's well known in South Africa at all.
No, it isn't. It's kind of more popular than ever these days, It's very popular. Yes, it has grown. It has a certain popularity.
But then?
In various places, Scottish people. But at that time, we just accepted the fact that we had this band.
Did you find it inspiring when you were on the march? Or?
Well, yes, it was good fun, route marches, walking through towns and that. They play the pipes and blow the bugles, and it was quite something. The old inspiration you get in the army when they blow the bugles and do things,
How did you get on with the other recruits?
Very well indeed, because so many of them had been at school with me. And with my rugby colleagues too, so I got on well with them, very well indeed. There was still a sort of animation, sort of antagonism between the Afrikaners and the Brits, the British, the English. We had this thing, they were, of course, the Afrikaner community, the whole setup being the government. They were really, lots of them were really against the war, but they'd already made this decision to send troops. They were with it, but they didn't want to join in at the time.
How did you get on with the Afrikaner recruits, or were there just not many in your...
Oh, there were some nice guys, others, Kellum, same as we had amongst the English-speaking fellows, too.
So it wasn't automatic that you'd grate against them?
It was not really automatic, no, because we knew them from playing rugby, too, and that sort of thing, We just didn't like the principles of apartheid, and that was one thing that grated us,
Was that unpopular with the English or ex-English community then?
At that time, yes, it was. It was not to the same extent as it grew after the war, but at that time there was definitely antagonism towards it by the British descent people, definitely.
And you shared that antipathy?
Yes, I did. Very much so.
Well, how did the apartheid? What state of apartheid had they got at that time? I mean, how bad
was it? Well, there was good and bad, as a matter of fact. The the bad was that they segregated people, put them in townships on their own, away somewhere else. They didn't give them a lot of the facilities that they didn't send them to university and that sort of thing. They had schools, but there were no university training or anything like that for them. And the laws have a special pass sort of thing, and whenever anybody questioned them, they had to show this pass, otherwise they'd put in jail. And they weren't treated well at all, and we were against it, of course, but that was just mildly compared with what we were like after the war, you know.
Yeah.
You see why it's a carry on.
Yes, we as residents and so on weren't allowed to really keep these chaps in a good state, you know, like give them a bicycle eventually a motor car, anything like that, even though they were good servants working for one. You couldn't do that. You just, the police didn't like it, you know, and they used to come around. You have no idea what it used to be like. That apartheid was terrible, and we hated it. But gradually, you know, strangely, I'm jumping a bit now, but...
No, hang on, we'll stick to that, because we'll keep things in time order.
Yes,
now,
yes.
So, now, you were training there. Any story, how did you get on with your NCOs, you know, the instructors who were training you?
Well, they were mostly Afrikaners, you know, who'd been trained in a permanent force, you see, so they were training us. I got on all right with them, you know, having associated with them in sport and all that sort of thing. I mean, I got on. Always this thing of background about the apartheid.
Were they good instructors?
Excellent. First class.
They knew this stuff. Were they bullies at all? I mean, there's this cartoon bully thing, but did they shout and swear and the rest of it, or how did they treat you?
Oh, to a certain extent, yes, they did. They did, but they were all right. Okay, we tolerated them, you know, put up with it.
And they were fair enough.
Good fun, you know. I was telling Julie the other day about the one instructor I went to on a course, and he was Afrikaans, and he used to chase us all over the place. It was a special course for non-commissioned officers, and all over the place, you know, and he started off shouting at us. He couldn't speak English very well. Quick as lively. Quick as lively, and we would laugh at this, you see, and he'd think we were laughing at him for some other reason, and he used to make us run about three or four times more around the quadrangle than we had before. That sort of thing used to happen, you see. Because I couldn't speak English all that well, and the colloquial way they spoke was very amusing to us, of course, when they spoke English, but we also weren't so good at Afrikaans, which we should have been, really, but in time we did.
Now, you were there for 4 months, which, what, June to October?
June, August, September, 3 months.
3 months, okay. And were you training with the whole battalion? And were you all recruits, or was it you were just a recruit company within the...
No, we were all mostly recruits, except for the instructors.
And some of the higher up
officers were...
Was it the depot for the NATO Mounted Rifles? The depot?
No, the depot for them was in Natal, in Durban still.
Right, okay. I just wondered who this was there. Was it the actual battalion?
Yeah.
Okay. So what happens next then?
Well, we were rushed up to... where did we go first? We went to... Well... cut a long story short, we finished up in...
That's the whole thing.
Okay. We were told that we were going into action and so on, and we were going to go forward, same thing. We gathered, we were given home leave, given 10 days home leave, and off we went. We gathered in a place called Pietermaritzburg. And this was the NMR and the SSB. They gathered up in Johannesburg, but we went by train. We went all the way through northern Rhodesia and southern Rhodesia by train, and then got off at a place called Broken Hill, right on the outskirts of northern Rhodesia.
Northern Rhodesia, that's what it was there.
Yes.
It's Zambia now, is it?
Zambia now.
And what was that train journey like? I mean, had you been on a journey that long before?
No, never, never.
What was
it like? It was all right. The chaps looked after each other, you know, and we used to stop at the odd place, and of course the people used to come out and give us cake and food and all that, and look after us so nicely, knowing that we were going somewhere which we probably didn't know very much about, you know, that we were going to. And we finished up at Broken Hill, and we were given transport there.
Lorries.
But they were only two-wheel drive, unfortunately, at the time. And they've been made up, these vehicles have been made up as troop carriers and all that, all done in South Africa for us. But we then went through to Kenya. But, of course, on the way to Kenya, we went through forests and all sorts and went into Tanzania on the way around.
Tanganyika.
Yes, called Arusha, yes, a place called Arusha, Tanganyika, yes. All by, and it was raining a lot of the time, and we were slipping and sliding and pushing these things. Sometimes we spent more time walking and pushing than we did riding in the transport. But anyway, we got to Kenya.
And that would be, what month would that be? Still September?
September,
or
yes. Still very September. Early, because I was October, November.
Yeah. Okay. Shall we try and keep it rough? Dating, you know, so we know.
Yes, I realise that. It's very difficult to remember.
Now, what happened in Nairobi?
Well, Nairobi, we went to camps. They'd formed various camps around there for us. In certain sections, we sort of dispersed into these places. I still went on with our training. And the people in Kenya, mostly British descent, were very kind to us, very good to us.
In what way?
Well, They arranged parties for us, tea parties and all that sort of thing, and had a talk H and so on, and even invited some of us out to their farms for weekends and so on. But we weren't there very long.
Now, tell me a bit about the training. How was your training developing there?
Well, of course, we were still training 2 or 3 days a week, you know, and still involved all the time. We only got weekends off. We were doing all sorts.
Now, you were just training as an infantryman at this point?
Yes.
Or were you learning to drive? Because you've become a driver later.
Yes, I'd learned to drive a lot before.
When had you done that?
Well, I'd done it with my father and so on at home.
So were you being trained at all as an army driver, or was that just...
No, not right then, no. No, but that comes later.
So anything else you're doing? It's a lot of running over hills, it says.
Yes, we did that too. We went off into places. Kenya being a mountainous place, lots of lakes and so on, we did quite a few route marches around there too.
And were you in the Nairobi area, or were you around Gilgil, or were you both?
No, we were around Nairobi at that time. We were in Nairobi, yes.
So what happened next then?
Well, from there we went to Gilgil. We moved, all of us moved to Gilgil, which is was an army camp higher up, getting near the Kenyan border. And so there we trained again, and then the time came when...
Now, were you in a larger formation at this time? Because you're just an Atoll Mounted Rifles, aren't you?
Yeah, no.
Now, what are you in?
No, we were in a battalion. We had the two SSB battalions with us as well. Special Service Brigade.
Right.
So they were with us too.
And what were you together, collectively? I mean, were you a brigade?
We were.
5th Brigade?
2nd Brigade.
2nd?
Yes, the 2nd Brigade.
Of the 1st South African Division?
1st South African Division, yes.
And who else was in it, or was it just these Special Service Brigades?
Well, mechanical people who used to have to look after trucks and all that sort of thing, and, you know, and we had our third echelon people who supplied the food and did all that sort of thing. They had joined us. Had been trained elsewhere, and they joined us as well. So they were with us. And then during that time that we were there, they found that they were very, very short of experienced drivers for the transport. And some of us were called out here because I had actually at one stage in Ladysmith taken my army license. We were asked to whether we would like to, and I went on a course with it. It was only 2 or 3 days actually, but I got my army driver's license driving a truck. So instead of being in the infantry, I was dragged out and put into the motor transport business.
Now, who were you with then? So it's motor truck?
Yes, I was still with the...
So the MT section of the Natal Mounted Rifles?
Yes, I was still with them, yes. But not long after that...
Now, were you involved in the East African campaign at all at this stage? you know, the...
No, we were still moving forward.
Right,
still moving forward, yes.